You're listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of January 7th, 2014. Hello and welcome to the Punk News Podcast. I'm Adam White, recording in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Thanks for joining us. Joining me on tonight's show, Mr. John Gentile.
What
out of
up?
Philadelphia. How you doing?
What up? Party!
Wow, that just kind of died off.
You can only party so much. I just reached my party quotient.
That was it.
So I am no longer partying for the rest of this podcast. From now on, I'm just going to be serious, considerate, thoughtful, eloquent, eloquent. I'll watch my diction. My speech will be measured. It'll be like who's that really boring guy on NPR? Terry Gloss or whatever his name is.
Terry Gross?
Yeah, the guy that's like the most boringest interviews in the entire world. I'll be like him. How are you, Adam?
And speaking of gross, we also have on the show out of I don't know where the hell you're always from. It's like,
come on.
It's like it's a very twee sounding place, like Northeast Bloomingfield, Fairyland, or something like that. I don't know. Where are you from?
Yeah, I'm from Bloomington, Indiana.
Bloomington, Indiana. But that doesn't sound that twee. We have Mr. Greg Simpson, the outdoor viewer. Himself.
Yes.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
Hi, guys. Glad to be back.
You've been on in a while,
Greg.
It has been since like last summer, I think, since I've been on.
Well, I guess the major difference between last summer and now and how we do this is that we don't really try anymore.
Great. Perfect.
I think things used to be more structured, and sometimes we just talk about nothing.
Well, John really got a hold of it lately, so.
Yeah, so that's just
that was
derailing.
The old John. This is the new non-partying measure.
Yes, this
John.
This is NPR, Adam, John.
Adam, what do you think of standard 17B for fracking? Do you think it will affect the wildlife of northeastern Ontario? There's very strong issues and very strong opinions on this subject.
I cannot believe that fracking is the nickname for that has become completely accepted, and like it's used in completely straight conversation. And every time I hear it, I'm just like, no, you sound
let's go
like
frack, baby.
You sound
it's
like kids.
Ridiculous.
Stop saying that. Oh. So,
I fracking love talking about frack.
Yeah, I was trying to come up with like a good segue there. Like speaking of hydrocarbons. So this week, a bunch of stuff happened. A lot of it involves media. So we're going to talk about things that you could be watching or listening to, which I'm sure is completely unengaging. So first of all, the Lawrence Arms have released a new music video for the song 17er, 17th and 37. It's a song that's going to appear on their upcoming Epitaph Records debut, Metropole, which is due out on January 28th of 2014. That album is their first since Oh Calcutta in 2006. You can see the video and listen to the song while you're watching said video on Punk News right now and basically everywhere. I think every punk related anything is talking about this. And I think a good question is, why are they talking about this? Is it the video, which is funny? Is it the song? Is it just pent up Lawrence Arms need? What do you guys think of this?
Yeah, I think it's all three. I mean, the video is freaking hysterical. I love it. And it's a good song too, but yeah, I think probably the biggest thing is that they haven't put out anything since I guess what year was Butt, Sweat and Tears?
I believe that was 2006 or 2007.
No, yeah, it was later than that. It had to.
Oh, it was?
It had to have been.
Yeah, I was thinking like 08 or 09, but I could be wrong.
Wish we had a website.
2009.
Yeah.
October 27, 2009.
Either way, it's been a while since they put out anything, so people are pretty excited.
You know what I think this video really highlighted for me was the complete disconnect between what the Lawrence Arms sound like and what they're their kind of like goofball imagery tends to be. I mean, that was a broad stroke. I mean, like, if you look at a lot of their album art and stuff, it doesn't show up through there. But like, this video very much feels like something that Brendan Kelly would, you know, be joking about on Twitter, only like far tamer. And it's goofy. It's a goofy, silly video where they're, you know, like Blink-182 did something like this back in the day.
Did they?
Yeah, the All the Small Things video from Enema of the State. I mean, they're making fun of.
Oh yeah,
they're making fun of like boy bands and stuff like that. But, yeah, you know, like today's boy band is Insane Clown Posse. So that's, I guess that's what they're doing. But like if you listen to the song and did not at all watch the video, it's like the Lawrence Arms are almost surprisingly restrained to me. Like, given the amount that people go absolutely crazy about them, you listen to a song like this, and, like, you know, there's, like, some, like, Dear You era Jawbreaker stuff happening where they're, like, you know, they're not goofing off or acting bonkers within the confines of the music, but they're doing that in the video. And I've always found that really interesting because I find that, like, their live show, at least the last live show I saw from them, which was at Pooza, was totally crazy. Everyone was going berserk, and it was more like the imagery in this video, I think, than the actual music. So I don't know. I think it's a really interesting dichotomy that they have.
Yeah, I've always found that. I mean, I don't know. I guess they're kind of a serious band. They touch on like a lot of literary references and stuff like that. Their songs aren't necessarily goofy. I always like a funny video for a serious song. I think that's when it really hits the hardest, like when there's a video for, I'm forgetting which Beach House song, but it's directed by Eric Wareheim of Tim and Eric fame, and it's just hysterical because it's a completely kind of, I mean, it's a very kind of serious song and, you know, just very smooth and glossy kind of thing, and then all of a sudden there's some guy riding a horse and some guy doing all these bizarre gymnastics and stuff like that. Have you seen that video?
No, I haven't, but punk quiz time, Eric Wareheim, what semi-famous Philadelphia punk band was he in?
Are you serious?
I am dead serious, and that's a clue.
Wait. yeah, I got no idea.
Ink and Dagger.
Really?
Yeah, he was. I mean, he wasn't like one of the main guys, but he was, I think he was on at least one recording.
Huh.
Wow.
As for this Lawrence Arms video, I mean, honestly, like, if you do, like, the real, like, the song is, like, really, really serious, and it's not a room smasher kind of song. It's really the kind of song where you sit by yourself and listen to it, you know? And so, if you make, and also there's a lot of expectation building up to this album. So, if you do, like, a song that visually represents the sonic part of this song, it's going to be sort of underwhelming. But if you really come out of the gate with, I mean, the video is hilarious. I mean, I know Brendan Kelly talks about Insane Clown Posse all the time, but like the video is really, really funny, especially the end. And so it's a good contrast, you know. Otherwise, it's too much overkill in like, otherwise you wind up being the weaker then, is what I'm saying, basically.
Let's not start this again.
What I would also say, though, is, I mean, I think this video just proves that really a big budget doesn't mean a video is going to be good. I mean, do you remember in the 90s when there was like so many big budget videos and the videos were just like stupid and pointless? I mean, this was like, it was filmed for about $1,000 and it's like hilarious and memorable, you know? I mean, same with the Beastie Boys, You Gotta Fight for Your Right to Party. That video costs like nothing to make and it's one of the greatest videos of all time. So it just goes to show that money, I would even be tempted to say that money has no effect on whether or not a video will be good or not. Although, like, maybe money has a small influence on it. Like, the Intergalactic video was pretty great. And I don't know why I keep talking about the Beastie Boys. But the Sabotage video was great, and that was filmed for, like, nothing as well.
That is a good one. Yeah, I mean, you got to have just enough money to make it look like it's not shot on your friend's, you know, flip camera.
Ah, but the last Bond the Music Industry video was shot on, like, a crappy camera, and it's awesome.
Touche.
So I gotta say, the moment in this Lawrence Arms video where they're spoofing on, like, I guess, like, Rancid or that kind of band.
Oh, yeah, with the hats, with the bowler hat.
Yeah, yeah, but where Brendan is walking down the street and he just kind of turns to like a payphone and just like throws the receiver off the payphone.
Yeah.
To me, that for whatever reason, that little gesture is the absolute funniest thing in this video. It's funnier than all the ICP stuff.
I cracked up at that too.
I don't know why. It is just, it's absolutely perfect. Like, it is what you would expect, like, in a Rancid thing.
But did you see the following joke that I think it was Neil Hennessy, like, followed up on the joke? Did you see that?
No.
He puts it back. Like, if you watch it again, Brendan, like, flicks it off, and I think it's Neil Hennessy, like, puts it back on after he walks past. It's a funny video, I gotta say.
That I need to go rewatch it now because I missed that. So, all right, yeah, cool. So it's Lawrence Arnn's video, and everyone seems to like it. So go and see that. You can find it on Punk News. So next, a label that I don't feel like we've talked about really at all on here, but they seem to be doing some really cool stuff. Oakland's Tank Crimes Records has released details for its second Brain Squeeze Fest. The festival will take place on April 18th, 19th, and 20th at the Oakland Metro and Eli's Mile High Club. The partial lineup will include Municipal Waste, Final Conflict, Ghoul, Negative Approach, Fucked Up, Cannabis Corpse, The Shrine, Iron Reagan, is it BAT or B-A-T?
BAT.
BAT. Okay, it's just capitalized. Like Brain Rat. Roll, Conquest for Death, Fucktard, and of course, the band that John considers the absolutely wonderful band, which features the inimitable Pete the Roadie, Kicker.
I love Kicker.
So, tickets are going on sale on February 1st. You can find more info on a link on Punk News. Fucked Up, by the way, are releasing their Tank Crimes debut at the fest, which is going to be their Year of the Dragon 12-inch. And as you, I don't know, maybe know, Fucked Up puts out a Year of the Whatever record every year, at least they try to. So there's, I'm trying to think what's out. Pig, Ox, and Tiger, at the very least, are out. There might
be Dog.
More. Oh, and Dog, yeah, okay. So yeah, so those ones all exist. I love Tiger, but anyways. Yeah, so there, Tank Crimes it has a Brain Squeeze Fest. John, this is a you story. It says you all over it. Talk about this here.
I'll tell you, like, Tank Crimes has been around for a while, like, I think 10 years, but really in the past 2 or 3 years, they've really come to life and been putting out some awesome, awesome stuff. And the band is, I mean, in the label is Scotty Heath, and I think he's in Drop Dead, which is like one of these Bay Area bands that everyone in the Bay Area think is huge, but nobody knows about outside of the Bay Area. But the point is, Tank Crimes puts out some awesome releases. Like Kickers on the label, which has Pete the Roadie, who roadied for Amoebix. He roadied for Subhumans. He roadied for Conflict. It's honestly, like, it's straight up UK 82 style punk, but it's so good and so hilarious. It's one of my very favorite bands. But also, I'm super – I'll actually be out in the Bay Area at this time, so I'll probably go to at least one of these shows. It's at the Oakland Metro, which is really cool. I think it's actually called, like, the Oakland Metro Opera House, but it's this huge venue, but, like, smaller bands play there just because rent is so cheap in that part of Oakland. So that's a great place to see plays shows. But also there's Eli's Mile High Club, which I've been to a couple of times. And that's a punk rock bar, but not in a good way. You know how there's, like, good punk rock bars and depressing punk rock bars that are kind of, like, filled with people that are, like, haven't made a lot of great decisions in their life and are kind of past the point where they can fix most of those decisions, you know? I got to say, I know a few things are as unglamorous as a 60-year-old getting kicked out of a bar for being drunk. You know what I mean? So that's Eli's Mile High Club. But for a festival like this, it's great. I mean, it's going to be awesome. So I'm super excited for this. Two things I want to mention is, well, Kicker's got a new record coming out, which I'm excited about. Effed Up. A daring statement. I'm not sure I stand behind it, but I might. I propose that Effed Up's Year of the Series are the best thing they do.
Hmm.
I love Dave Comes to Life. It was pretty great.
I love. Well, really, see, I like Chemistry of Common Life better than David Comes to Life. But I love Year of the Pig. That's like my favorite Effed Up release.
Year of the Pig is such a nasty record. Like it is just such a mean sounding thing, you know.
That's why, and it's such an epic song, and it's one of their longest Year of tracks, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're all generally really long. I'm trying to see which one I have sitting here next to me. I feel like I bought, I feel like it was Tiger, the last one that was out. I think it was, I bought it in a show. And like the B-side Ear of the Tiger is just like this crazy extended shoegazy jam that's on there.
Oh no.
Was it not?
Oh no. That's what it's called. Oh no.
Oh no. Okay. Yeah. All right. I think we're like,
who's up like, first?
No. Oh boy. Anyways, yeah. Fucked Up is good. I don't know where I was going with that. I completely phased.
Negative Approach. I actually just saw Negative Approach. I talked about this on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, but I just saw Negative Approach about, I don't know, 4 weeks ago or so. And I'll just tell the story again. I will have my day, because when I saw Negative Approach, man, they were awesome live. They were, I mean, I didn't think they would be that awesome. I just went because, like, I don't even know that a whole lot about Negative Approach, but I know they're like kind of like not quite the most famous old school hardcore band, but close to it, you know. And so I went, and man, they were awesome live. And after the show, the main guy is John Brannon. Like, afterwards, people were like, yo, at the merch table, they're like, John, that was an awesome show. And the guy said to the, and John Brannon was like, thanks, man. Thanks for coming out. He like shook the guy's hand and like tapped his shoulder. You know, next guy is like, John, man, that was so awesome. He's like, oh, thanks for coming out, man. It means so much. Thanks so much. And he like slaps him five and stuff. So I go up, I'm like, can I get a 7-inch and a CD? I'm like, hey, man, that show was really, really great. I loved it. And he says to me, awesome. And then he goes to the next guy. And I was like, oh! I totally got bird dogged by John Brannon of Negative Approach.
Oh, boy. So we're going to keep going, talking about things that are going on, new media that has been released. The Bruce Lee Band, the ska supergroup featuring... on this recording, at the very least, Sean Bonnet of Andrew Jackson Jihad have released a new song titled We've Got the Money, We've Got the Power. The song comes out in their forthcoming EP, Community Support Group, which is due out on January 28th, 2014, via Really Records. And you can find another song from the EP called Miss Me, linked on Punk News that we posted earlier. So, so this song is up. You guys should go check it out. I really like it. But anyways, what do you guys think?
I dig it pretty hard. I mean, I still love ska stuff. I can't say I seek it out a whole lot anymore, but just growing up on it, this totally fits right in with what I loved back in the day.
I guess we should mention, who else is in this, who's in this band at the moment. So, right now, the Bruce Lee Band is featuring, of course, Mike Park of Asian Man Records and Skank and Pickle. Jeff Rosenstock, who you guys all know, is from Bomb Music Industry. Mike, what is it?
Huguenor.
Huguenor?
Yeah,
Of Classics of Love, who we love. And Kevin Higuchi, is that right? Of the Chinkies. So, they're all in the band. Okay, anyways, getting back to the song. Sorry, John.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited. They have a full-length coming out next summer, too. I've actually already pre-ordered this, so I'm excited for this. I think it's going to be cool. I mean, all those musicians are great. And, I mean, actually, and more importantly, all those musicians really know how to write a great song. So I'm excited. I mean, honestly, this isn't going to – I think this isn't going to, like, radically alter anybody's life or anything. And it's not going to be, like, Mike Park's second golden age of making music. But it's going to be a fun release for this year. And I think it'll wind up on a lot of top 10 lists. Honestly, kind of like Classics of Love. Probably won't have quite the same effect as Classics of Love, but it'll be like one of these explosive, short-lived projects that people will always remember fondly.
You know, I'm really, and it almost breaks my argument because Jeff Rosenstock is involved in this, and if he wasn't, it would make this a far stronger thing that I'm going to say. But there's like a ramshackleness to this, and that is very similar to what you'd get out of Bomb. That, you know, I've heard the argument before where people have gone and they've said that, you know what, like, if you ever want to, like what would you consider, like, the fourth wave of ska? And Bomb the Music Industry is a pretty good indicator of what that would sound like. And this band, to me, is in that same vein. Where it's, you know what, it has, it's, it's gone forward. It's not reprising the past. It's learned from, you know, the excesses and everything and the goofiness that kind of happened, you know, as the third wave imploded on itself. And it's just going to, you know what, just like cast off all of its inhibitions and just go crazy. And that's what I like about this. This is what I like about the sound of this. Like, it sounds like they're having a lot of fun. It sounds like a bunch of guys just in a room just fucking banging out a song that they love. So that's good.
I gotta say, though, I don't think ska will ever again be a driving force in the music scene, at least for like the next 50 years.
No, they've pretty much torched. Well, you know what? I don't think anything really is that. But definitely not that.
I mean, honestly, I think ska earned and squandered quite a bit of goodwill with the second wave, with the third wave, rather. I mean, there were so many bands that were huge, and there were so many bands that were just mediocre. And I think it's because ska is relatively easy to play, and so you can be a competent ska band fairly easily. That's why so many people were ska bands, and it's fun to dance to. But I think it was just overkill, you know.
It happens with all of them. Like, I mean, with grunge, I mean, there were so many shitty grunge bands. I mean, you just get a distortion pedal and a flannel shirt, and then you just make a racket. And
true, but I would argue there's way more bands that are currently influenced directly by grunge than ska right now.
Yeah, perhaps you're right there.
But is that because grunge has a wider range of sounds, or is less defined? I mean, ska is pretty easy to define. You know, upstrokes and beats on the 1 and 3, right? Isn't that ska, or 2 and 4? That's ska, 2 and 4. You know. But I mean, what's grunge? You know, a bunch of guys in smelly flannel that do drugs, you know? So it's basically the Lawrence Arms. Moving on.
I think the answer to your question there, though, is that, you know, it's a lot easier to take elements of grunge and then like extrapolate a modern sounding band out of that. That's harder with ska. I mean, ska is sort of, you know, it puts you into a certain, you know, it walks you down a certain road that doesn't really intersect with a lot of other, you know, common kind of rock and roll stuff. Like you can be, you can be influenced by grunge and you can sound like fucking Nickelback, or you can be influenced by grunge and sound like Pissed Jeans, right? So you can take that either way. But, you know, if you're influenced by ska, you're probably going to kind of sound like a ska band.
Why is ska considered so dorky and grunge, for example, is considered so cool? Why is grunge inherently cooler than ska?
Ska is cool, man.
I like ska. I mean, I like a lot of ska bands. But, I mean, it's not a tag that I agree with. But, I mean, if you're at a cool party, you're way more likely to fit in if you're at a cool party. If you're like, yeah, I really like Mudhoney. Than if you're like, yeah, man, I love the Bruce Lee band. Skank it up. Pick it up.
It's because all of us band dorks were in ska bands. We're like, hey.
Is it the trombone?
But it's weird because you would expect that with the way that like geek culture is now basically a completely accepted part of the mainstream. That some reason ska didn't get to come along for the party. Like you can go to that party wearing like a Harry Potter scarf and like proclaim your love for Doctor Who, and everyone will be like, yeah. But then, you know, you go to the same thing and you're like, you know, like, I love the Aquabats, and everyone's just gonna, you know, look at you sideways. So
you wear like all checkered stuff. You got like the tie on, you know, the checkered shoes.
But I still sport checkered Van slip-ons.
I would argue that geek culture actually hasn't intruded mainstream society. Just the superficial face of geek culture has as a new cool chic, you know.
Big Bang Theory.
Well, yeah, I've never even watched that show. But for example, it's like people like, you know, being nerdy is cool. But if you go to a cool party and start talking about Dungeons and Dragons, they'll kick you out. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I've tried. So
you test the theory every few months. Eh? You just show up at high school parties. Hey, kids!
What about Dungeons and Dragons?
It's like, come out to my van. That's where I keep the monster manual.
But see, like I said, I think cool people just adopt like the glasses and say they're nerdy, but aren't really.
So, hey, can either of you guys tell me why isn't this coming out on Asian Man?
Oh, I think it is. Well, it's coming out on Really Record, which is Jeff Rosenstock's label. I think the full length is, but I think they're just putting it out on Jeff Rosenstock's label. I mean, what's in a name? Was a rose by any other name would be just as beautiful. But but I mean, like, you, like, honestly, like, you don't know the agreement for Really Records. Like, maybe you know, Mike Park and I mean, let's be real. Nobody's making Cadillac money off of 7-inch. You know what I mean? And right. So they might just be breaking even, or they might just be splitting it. Like, I think they're making 500 units. So 500 units times, what is it? I think $7 a record. That's 3,500. Figure pressing costs at $1,000. That's 2,500 minus miscellaneous costs. You're looking at about $1,000 profit divided five ways. Not a whole lot of money to be pushed around there. You know,
pressing vinyl is ridiculous. I've looked into it and I've never been able to do it myself because it is, unless you're doing thousands, it just doesn't make sense. They're only doing 500 of this. Do you know that?
I think so. I can tell you the exact number. I know it was quote limited, but everything's limited these days, you know. Yeah. But I think the point is, I think the full length is coming out on Asian Man, but I think you're just putting it out because Rosenstock is part of this. Oh, it's only $5 actually.
Wow.
And which is cool, as opposed to the Misfits who are charging $10 for two songs. This is the way to do it. $5, people. I don't know how many they're pressing, but I mean, not a whole lot, like 500, I think. And then, and so my point is that I think the 7-inch is really almost just a publicity tool these days. And what little money there is to be had is being made through the Asian Man full length release, you know. And plus, that's the thing that bands do these days, which I don't even necessarily hate. Like, they'll put out, like, a bunch of limited edition 7-inches and then put them all out on a CD for cheaper, which I'm not even against that. Even though it is kind of milking the fans, it's like, well, if you really got to have a vinyl, that's the premium you got to pay, you know?
Right. Did I cut out on you guys just a second ago? Technical difficulty? I lost you guys for a second there.
Nope. Or at least, okay. Well, maybe all we right. Cut out for you, but no one would know that.
Until I said it.
Now they know. So, Philadelphia's Restorations are embarking on their first European headlining tour. They're taking Australia's Smith Street Band and Austria's Aspatti with them for the trek. They're going to be supporting their latest full-length LP2, which was, at least as far as the voting goes, the punknews.org record of the year for 2013. So they're kicking things off on April 15th with a show in Bristol in England, and then they are going to be on the road throughout April and throughout most of May, wrapping up on the 16th of May in Solothurn, Switzerland. So they are going to be in, they're going to be all over the place. Germany, Holland, Belgium, Denmark, Austria, France, and all over the UK, England, Scotland, Wales. Yeah. So anyways, they're there. Check the tour dates. They're on Punk News. Anything to talk about for this one? Or is it just a public service announcement that we're doing for all of our European listeners?
I gotta say, this band is huge in Philadelphia. Restorations, like they'll play the biggest small punk clubs, if that makes any sense. I mean, they're not you know, NoFX big, but in Philadelphia they're pretty big. The question is with Philadelphia bands, it seems like Philadelphia bands never really get super big. They get to a certain height and then just peter out. Will Restorations be stricken with the Philadelphia curse?
While I like Restorations a lot, I mean a lot. I don't really know how their sound translates to whoever that mythical group of people is that you actually need to become like a bigger band. I mean, it's not stuff for kids. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, you know, they're not going to, I can't see them having like a really goofy poppy hit single that's all of a sudden going to matter to people that you know, that inflate a band like that. So I don't know. I mean, I could see them getting bigger within the punk scene. It's, you know, it doesn't necessarily feel to me like, you know, like they're not NoFX or anything at this point. But I don't know where they go outside of that. But then again, I don't know how any band gets outside of that. So
Do you think if they, like, on the next record they went third wave ska, do you think that would help them get bigger?
Third wave ska in a time machine, maybe.
I actually just listened to Restorations for the first time today. I listened to LP2. It made me want to go listen to Small Brown Bike.
Yeah, I mean, they have a sound that is, like, in that kind of, like, to me, they sound so much like the Constantines. So there's, you know, they reference a lot of bands that I would imagine, have an even smaller fan base than Restorations could aspire to. So, like that. That's why, John, I don't think they're going. I can't imagine them going to, like, you know, they're not hitting the heights. You know, if you sound like Small Brown Bike and the Constantines, and, like, you know.
I mean, doesn't it seem like Hot Water Music's fans would be all over this? I mean, they could achieve
sure,
that level,
but that's still
of
really
success.
that's still inside baseball as far as punk rock goes. Like, no one in the real world gives a shit who or knows who Hot Water Music is. Even
yeah. Listen to this.
I suppose
I've got a couple of friends that are pretty into heavy metal, and Hot Water Music played Philadelphia with Torch, and they went to see Torch. You know, and they're like, yeah, we were gonna stay around for the second band, but, like, we thought it was boring. And, like, it's funny because, like, in punk rock wise, Hot Water Music is, like, the modern punk rock band, you know. And my friends, like, went for Torch, and they're like, what is this music, you know?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly easy for us to look at stuff that is big in our weird little echo chamber, and the internet makes it entirely worse, because the internet means that, like, you know, if you're a Lawrence Arms fan, if you're a Restorations fan, you can get online and find, like, a whole bunch of people that are really into that band, and it seems like you have a community and a movement, and I guess maybe you do, and that's the beauty of the internet. But, like out in the real world, like, go wander up and down the street and start questioning people if they've ever heard, like, you know, if it ask them, you know, if the No Idea era of Hot Water Music was better than their Epitaph stuff, right? I mean, it's,
even ask if they've heard of NoFX, and they probably haven't.
Yeah, I mean, like, this stuff matters to such, like, a select group of people that it's, and we're operating at this point without, you know, like, a dominant mainstream music voice. I mean, you could have said, you know, 15 years ago, oh, well, if Restorations writes the right song and it gets really big on MTV, then, you know, maybe. But that doesn't even happen anymore, I think. Like, there's
hits
no...
Hits don't have guitars in them anymore.
Yeah, like, there's no... Outside of them writing some incredibly quirky oddball song that becomes a viral YouTube hit or something. Like, that's how you do it these days? Like... Like, what other rock bands all of a sudden become big?
Okay, Go had those crazy music videos a few years ago. That kind of did it for them.
Greg, I mean, I'm not trying to bust your balls, but Okay Go is not a huge band, you know?
Yeah, well, okay. But they gained a lot of notoriety for just having goofy videos. And, like, their videos went viral, and people therefore got to hear their songs. I mean, they're not a huge band, but they gained a... videos.
Colts are pretty big. They've got a guitar, you know. That's about it.
Yeah.
Colts.
I don't even know who that is.
Yeah. They're actually kind of cool.
Yeah, I like them. They're a duo from Brooklyn, I believe.
Oh, boy. We have a lot of weird, awkward silence in this show. Let's play some music. What do you want to do?
Let's play something from that you will hear at the Brain Squeeze 2 Fest. This is Municipal Waste doing Morning Sex. And that's MourNing. Morning Sex. It's all Municipal Waste Toxic Holocaust split on Tank Crimes Records, available now.
Wrong. I did by these urges that I never felt.
Okay, and we're back on the Punk News Podcast. This is Adam. I have Greg, and I have John. Sorry. Wow.
Did that was that grunt a sign of disrespect towards me?
No, it was a, I said Greg, and then my brain said, Adam, you just said John. You got to say Greg. Don't forget Greg's name. And then, but I did, and here we are. Oh, God. This is a bad show. Let me tell you. Okay, the Pixies. The Pixies have a new video for the song Blue-Eyed Hexy. At least I'm going to call it that because that's how they seem to say it in the song. It's not Hex. It's Hexy or something. Which comes from their new EP, uncreatively titled EP2, that is available for purchase on their website. It follows up 2013's EP1. The video for the song you can find on Punk News and take a look at it. What do you guys think?
I like it. And I reviewed their EP1, and I'm planning on doing EP2. I actually got access to the stream of, I've heard the whole thing, and I think in general it is stronger than EP1, and I like this Blue-Eyed Hexy or whatever, because it's real crunchy and aggressive. Like, it's
would you say it's grunge influenced or ska influenced?
I guess closer to grunge, right? You could
if those are the two choices you have.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a pretty strong song, but there's another one. I won't go into it much. There's another one on the EP that I really, really like. So I think people are going to be a lot happier about this EP.
You see, like, I think that, like, well, the video is very cool for this song. I'll give them that. And I really like the guitar tone in this song. There's like a classic rocky kind of thing happening there, which is kind of neat for a band like Pixies. But as much as I kind of dig this, there is no chorus to this song. At least not one that's really like took them more than like 45 seconds to write. They repeat the name of the song 4 to 5 times. And I was really hoping it was building to something a little bit more interesting than that, but that's kind of where it goes. And it, I don't know, it could have been a very good song, but I think it's just kind of like, I don't know, they missed an opportunity there to actually do something really cool. So, but I don't know, that's how I read it.
You said that classic rock thing. I like this one comment. Fuck you, 6666 said, does anyone else think this song sounds a lot like Back in Black? Seriously, reminds me of AC/DC.
Oh, you found my handle on Punk News. John, what do you think of this sucker?
I didn't think it was good as I didn't think it was as good as Back in Black, but a few things are. the Pixies, speaking of bands that have squandered a lot of goodwill, Frank Black has been a kind of been abrasive towards the fans lately, I guess you could say. Like, remember about like 2 years ago, he's like, yeah, we basically just reformed for the cash, you know. And then now, like, he just kicked out, was it Kim Shattuck? He just kicked out of the band. So and then like his answer was like, we kicked out our bassist, not a big deal. You know, like that was his response. But on the other hand, it's like, I don't know if all musicians have to be nice people. Like, I don't know if you could be a nice person to make the Pixies music. Because, I mean, I think the fundamental angle of the Pixies is they make pretty sounding music that has some very dark undertones. Greg, did I get that right? Is that how you would describe the Pixies to an alien?
I like that description, yes.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know if Frank Black needs to be a nice guy. The track was all right, you know. Honestly, I tried to get into the Pixies once before I've got Trompe Le Monde or whatever that track, the album was called. And I also have the album with the monkey on the cover. And Doolittle. I really couldn't get into it. I'll check it out again probably in a little while, and maybe I'll get it. Pixies are cool. They've got a unique sound. This track, I would say, is a solid C+.
I think, John, I think that of any band that you haven't explored that much, there's a lot that you would like if you went and got into the Pixies and really kind of dug around there.
There's a lot of third wave ska in it, because that's what
there's not a lot of third wave ska, but I mean, like, and it's weird because like Trompe Le Monde isn't at all where I would go. No. There. I mean, like,
well, honestly, you know how I got into the Pixies is I knew they were like a big band, and I bought the cheapest ones they had at the CD store. That's, I mean, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, like, sold back to the store.
I mean, like, you have Doolittle, but, like, you would love Server Rosa, and, like, the Come On Pilgrim EP, you would totally be into, so.
Well, I'll check it out.
And Surfer Rosa was produced by Steve Albini. I'm assuming you're a fan of his.
No, I'm actually sort of anti-Albini, to tell you
this. Really?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to listen to something, because he did produce Ohm's third album, and it's awesome. But, I mean, if something is just stamped Albini, I'm not necessarily going to be down with it. But I wouldn't be anti it either.
Actually, you might kind of like Bossa Nova, too.
Mm.
It gets a little bit 90s, but it's there are songs on there that I think are very, very strong songs.
Adam, you sound like you're a big Pixies fan.
I when I was in university, I really got into Pixies, and I don't even remember why. It was one of those things that were like, it's a band that's before my generation, so I have total legit reason to like not know anything about Pixies. Like I don't know anything about, let's say, it's a band I don't know anything about, like, I don't know, like the Meat Puppets, right?
Oh, come on.
I don't.
They're great.
Right? And I get that they're great. It's just one of those things that, like, I only have so much time in my life, and I have not yet, like, taken that journey. But I recognize that band existed. And I think, like, that's what – I think for, like, a lot of people that were, like, of the generation that came after, you know, the bands like Pixies kind of made their mark, you at some point have to sit down and make the effort where, you know what, I'm going to go back – and figure out what the hell was going on with, you know, with like with the Replacements or Pixies or Husker Du or the Smiths or anything like that, right? Because like that's not something we were naturally exposed to. So like if you're gonna do it, you got to sit down and actually do the work.
Yeah, actually, you know, there's like five bands that I really need to do work on. I need to do work with the Pixies. I need to do work with Husker Du. I need to do work with the Replacements. I was actually just listening to Tim the other day, and I wasn't really feeling it, you know. I need to do work with oh crap, I forgot the other two. Oh well, that's three of the ones.
Husker Du, don't listen to that Melvin's jerk. You get... Zen Arcade is great, but New Day Rising is where it's at.
I don't know what he was bagging on New Day Rising for.
Who Buzz Osborne was?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Just for the Pug News listeners, though, today at the AV Club, actually, I'm a little bitter about this, but not really. Is at the AV Club today. Buzz Osborne like named bands that were great, but then blew it, and I was bitter because I pitched an interview to the AV Club, but they actually already had something like in the works with it, which was this, and the piece was pretty big on the internet, you know, and so I was bummed out that like it could have been mine had I been quicker on the draw, you know. Aww. But so anyway, Ford, like, he named bands that he loved that he said blew it, and he was really harsh on Husker Du.
I think it was a harshness that comes from love, though.
Mm.
I think they're one of the, I think this sort of the same thing works with the Replacements here, where like if you were there early on with those bands when they went from having, you know, a much more, you know, abrasive punk rock sound to something that was much more radio friendly, that, you know, there's an emotional betrayal there that you feel that I don't think you necessarily let go of. That's the one kind of nice thing about us coming in to these bands after the fact, is that, like, I can sit down and go, okay, I'm gonna learn about the Replacements now and go through that discography. And I know just from, like, doing the reading on it that, like, okay, this was the point at which they signed to a major label and pissed everyone off, and people didn't like it for this reason, but maybe the redeeming qualities are that. And you kind of listen to it through that lens of history where you go, like, okay, like, yeah, I could see why this kind of ticked people off at the time, but there's some stuff I actually like here, right? So it's a totally different way of approaching it. I mean, and I think that's the way it works with any of these bands where you're getting to them after the fact. I mean, like, you can, you know, you can absolutely sit down and do the same thing with, like, you know, you can do the same thing with, like, the Black Flag discography, really, where there's so much, you know, discussion about, you know, going from vocalist to vocalist and the direct and that, how they started getting more, like, weird and metal as they went on, and how if you were there at the time listening to that stuff, it was coming out, you know, it totally makes sense that going from one EP to the next or something and all of a sudden the vocalist changes and maybe it's not your preference, and that might piss you off. But, you know, we approach it going, all right, this is the story of this band, so listen to these various songs that explains kind of like, you know, that kind of demonstrates what happened. And it's a different read, you know?
True, but I actually think it's a failure of the punk rock community, actually. You know, we often bag on the punk rock community for being closed-minded, and that stereotype isn't without a basis. I mean, if we compare this to, like, heavy metal, I mean, AC/DC was one of the biggest hard rock slash heavy metal bands in the world, and they got a new vocalist, and everybody was down with it. They were like, well, Bon Scott passed away, but Brian Johnson is great. Iron Maiden's original vocalist, they were pretty popular, but then they kicked him out and they brought in Bruce Dickinson. They were even more popular. How about when Judas Priest, Judas Priest actually had three or four singers. Al Atkins was the first one. They weren't popular with him. But then even when Halford switched out and Tim Owens came in, like people didn't hate on Judas Priest for having a new singer. So I think like the heavy metal community is honestly more open to change from their artists than the punk rock community.
I would agree with that.
And also my whammer, my double whammy is even when the change is terrible, the hard rock community is still down with it. When Van Halen went from David Lee Roth to Sammy Hagar, they became bigger than ever. And Sammy Hagar is terrible.
This is true.
I mean, talk about a cheesy, maudlin, bland singer. Right here. Don't forget about tomorrow. Like, that's terrible. That is bad. They went from singing about having sex with their teacher in study hall to, like, talking about, like, how you should, I don't know, like, be right here, right now. It's terrible.
Crystal Clear Pepsi.
So that's my point.
Wasn't that the song in the Crystal Clear Pepsi commercial? Am I remembering correctly?
I would challenge the Punk News listeners to let us know what punk rock bands have changed their vocalists and the punk rock community has been accepting. Dillinger Escape Plan, maybe.
Seosin, they kind of went away after that, though. After Adam Green left, they kept going and were pretty big.
I don't know who that is.
But Anthony Green. Wait, is that? I don't know, I'm forgetting.
Yeah, Adam Green, and I know this because I just looked this up, actually, because I was looking at the back of Crazy in the Brain's album. Adam Green is on that. He's like an alt-folk singer. Anthony Green is the guy in Saracen.
Yes, and then Circus Survive, but yeah.
Yeah, and now he's like a folk guy too.
Yeah,
everybody's a folk guy these days.
Hey, though, to bring it back to the Pixies, when you were talking about, I mean, specifically changing out singers, I think a lot of people have given the new Pixies stuff a lot of shit for changing out backup singers. Because with Kim Deal leaving, like, and that's my biggest concern too, because I feel like, like you've said, they have pretty songs with, I can't remember how you phrased it.
Third wave Scott undertones.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the prettiness, it wasn't coming from Frank Black, it was coming from Kim Deal, you know, and they've kind of lost that pretty, you know, kind of wispy element, and now it's all just crunchy and growly.
Well, hopefully they'll bring in Dickie Barrett, so.
Oh, all right. We got a couple more before we wrap it up today.
Pick it up, Adam. Pick it up.
Dickie Barrett, man. Anyways, okay. Fake Problems frontman Chris Farron, who is, I'm just going to declare, he's kind of like the platonic boyfriend of everyone, has posted a cover that he recorded of Don't Be Shy, originally by Cat Stevens, or Yusuf Islam, as he's known these days. The recording is part of Farron's new cover project, where he'll be posting a new cover every Monday at the website The Ruckus, which is whattstheruckus.com. And he'll be doing that every
Monday
through April. So
Monday,
this,
Monday, Monday.
So yeah, so you can go check this out and stream it. It's a Cat Stevens song. So there you go.
I love Cat Stevens.
What do you think of this cover?
The movie Harold and Maude. Have you guys ever seen Harold and Maude? It's one of my favorite movies ever. You haven't seen it?
I've seen Terminator 2. Is it like that?
There are some people dying at no. Don't Be Shy is the very first song in the opening credits of that movie. And that was the movie that introduced me to Cat Stevens. It's all Cat Stevens. And I really do like the cover. It seems, even though it's kind of stripped down, it's not quite as phoned in as when Frank Turner was doing all those covers, because that annoyed the crap out of me. It's like, if you're not doing anything unique with the song or putting any sort of twist on it, like, you can't just sit down, strum the basic chords on an acoustic and post it and think anyone's going to go apeshit over it. Like, you got to do something with it. to make it your own. And I feel like there's enough going on here. It's simple, but there's enough going on that keeps interesting. And I love the song. He does do the on by part. He does it a little wrong towards the end, but that's just bug me because I know the song really well. But I liked it, so there you go.
Cool. I like.
Go ahead, Adam. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I am by no means. I mean, if there's any band that I have not yet added to my like library of things that I'm knowledgeable about, it's Cat Stevens. So I have no idea what the original sounded like listening to this. I like Chris Farren. I like the whole direction Chris Farren's been going in. It's cool to hear more stuff from him. So that's entirely the lens that I see something like this through. So, you know, it's not changing my life or anything, but, you know, it's nice to hear more Chris Farren stuff.
My point is, like, with the singer song, how come everybody wants to become Mr. Folk? You know, how come nobody's covering Napalm Death? How come nobody's covering Hawkwind? How come nobody's covering Pink Fairies? Everyone always wants to cover Cat Stevens or Frank Turner or Simon and Garfunkel. I mean, not that that stuff's bad, but when did punk rock become quiet guys with quiet guitars singing about quiet things? I didn't get into punk rock to be quiet. I got into punk rock to destroy stuff. Yeah!
I like doing the opposite thing, actually, on my band's first EP. We took a Weaker Than song. You should listen to this. We took a Weaker Than song.
I'm down with that.
It's an acoustic finger pluck thing. We changed the time signature and we made it shoegaze.
You could have made it third wave ska, but that's a pretty cool conversion too, is the shoegaze. I do know, how come nobody ever covers like Napalm Death? Or how come nobody ever covers Discharge? Well, people cover Discharge. How come nobody ever covers Rudimentary Peni? How come nobody ever covers Antisect or Flux of Pink Indians? Like, they always cover Cat Stevens, some guy that plays a guitar and sings about his brother, you know? I mean, even, you know, check this out. If Elton John is rocking harder than you, then you need to reset your life's priorities.
How about if I did a third wave ska cover of Napalm Death?
That'd be awesome. I would buy an album of that. I'm not even kidding.
Oh, so speaking of third wave ska covers of Napalm Death, we have one last tour that we want to talk about here. The Hold Steady and Tim Barry are hitting the road to play some shows together. They're going to get together in Memphis, Tennessee on January 29th, and they'll play throughout the rest of that month and then a handful of shows in February, wrapping up at really February 6th in Brooklyn. And then going on after that, both acts have various other festivals and shows that they're playing on their own. You can find all those dates on Punk News. The Hold Steady, speaking of covers, this is actually fits very well, recently raised money via a crowdsourcing website for an EP of covers, which they're calling the Unified Scene. So there you go. I don't know if we know anything about that yet, do we? At least I don't know anything about that.
I was looking at this Unified Scene website, and it's kind of confused me a little bit.
All right, let's see. So looking at the PledgeMusic.com website, there is a heavy use of a blue-to-black gradient, which is sort of jarring.
I don't think it's technically out yet, honestly.
No, I wonder, like, do we know what song's gonna be on it? That's what I'm curious about.
Napalm Death's You Suffer But Why is the first cover. I think they're doing a ska version of it.
So it seems like this Unified Scene is basically their fan club. It's like their Aquabats super, what did the Aquabats call their fan club? I'm just trying to put ska into everything here. Anyway, so some guy who was kind of a leader vocal member of this fan club was this guy Mike, Jersey Mike, and he passed away unexpectedly, so I guess they're raising money for him. I don't know. I mean, they're doing like a crowdfunding Kickstarter type thing. I don't understand how the money's going to his family or whatever, but the thing that confused me, trying to find this here. Okay, a portion of every pledge will be donated to the K&L Guardian Foundation to remember a great fan and friend and to help the two young children he left behind. Hold on, I'm trying to find a thing that confused me in here. Something about how you had to be a member of the Unified Scene fan club to... Yeah, okay, so when you pledge, you join this fan club, and the covers EP is only available to people who are in the fan club, which seems kind of weird and exclusive and very unhold steady.
I gotta say, though, I love bands. Like, none of my favorite bands do fan clubs, but I love fan clubs. I'm not even a huge Metallica fan, but the Metallica fan club makes me want to join because, like, every year, like, they send members of their fan club, like, a really rare CD that, like, fans would love that other people want. I'm not even a U2 fan, but every year U2 sends out, like, a super rare, exclusive, unreleased music CD to their fans of their fan club. I wish my favorite bands were in fan clubs.
Hmm. Yeah, I didn't know anyone still really did that.
Yeah, I don't think a whole lot, because, I mean, I think it's so, it's as a fan, it's so easy to get burned, because you're like, all right, here's my $35 or whatever, and then you never see anything, you know, and it's like, well, you're not going to, like, sue your favorite band for $35, but it's the same problem with Kickstarter, man. I've been burned by 3 Kickstarters in a row. I'm really kind of tired of it.
Really?
Yeah. Damn. I don't want to name names, because they're, like, some of my favorite bands. But I the past 3 Kickstarters I put money to, and we're not talking $5. We're talking, like, you know, $35, $40, $50, and I didn't get anything. You know, it's pretty kind of.
Were the projects successful? Did they reach their funding goal?
Yeah, like a year.
Wow, man! I'll tell you, if you pledge to my band's Kickstarter that's going right now, we will hook you up. Seriously, though, I got one going right now.
I hate to hear that. I mean, I've had pretty good luck with things that I've got off of.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe it's the kind of band you guys hang out with. Like, you guys hang out with these quiet, nice singer songwriter guys, and I'm hanging out with the guys that just want to destroy everything.
Well, hold on. That said, I don't think I've ever actually kickstarted anything from like a music standpoint. I think everything that I've done has been comic books, so I always end up getting those. So yeah,
yeah, I've funded quite a few things, and I've been a part of some successful campaigns. So like the last Outdoor Floor EP. We were able to make the packaging really awesome through a successful Kickstarter campaign, and everyone got their rewards through that one. And now my other band, Minus World, we're doing one for our next EP, and you can win a hug from our bass player. It's a pretty rare occurrence.
And the answer to your question earlier was the Aqua Cadets.
Aqua Cadets. Yes.
That's all.
Fan clubs are kind of fun.
Fan clubs are kind of pre-internet, though.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, we'll give you this rare track, and like, well, I already found that online.
The Misfits back in the day had the best fan club. They would mail out like free stickers and stuff. And
the Fiend Club, right?
The Fiend Club, and like, I think they even mailed out like a free 7-inch to fans, which is like worth $1 million now. And man, like, it would have been so awesome to be part of the Fiend Club. I think Black Flag sort of had a mailing list, which is basically a fan club back in the day.
Yeah, and I think that you just touched on it. It's the where I think you see this more these days are they when they're coming up with these 7-inch kind of club things. Like, one of my favorite bands is a local band around here called the Dirty Nil, and the Nil just did like a 1-year kind of like record club subscription where you paid like however much and you got like something like 3 limited edition 7-inches throughout the year that had like different shit on them that they came up with.
That's so cool.
Like, I've seen that sort of thing happen, I think, a little bit more these days, because at least you're getting something. It's not just like, give us money and we might send you shit.
Yeah.
But yeah. So anyways, that's the week in punk news. Anything else you guys want to do? You want to plug anything, Greg?
I think I've already done enough plugging.
Well, okay, so cool. So here, I'm going to plug us. So the Punk News Podcast is now available on Stitcher.
What is Stitcher, Adam?
What is Stitcher? So,
it's like a sex act. Is it a sex app?
It's probably also a sex act. But the Stitcher that we're talking about is it's an online radio service. They have an app for iOS and an app for Android. So you can go and you can subscribe to like all of your favorite various podcasts. So, you know, there's us now that are on there. And then there's like all these shows that you've probably never heard of, like This American Life and Radiolab and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and stuff. But really, it's about us. So you go and you subscribe, and then our latest episodes show up on your dingus when they happen and stuff like that. And yeah, it allows you to listen to the Punk News podcast through that. Now, Stitcher is also integrated with a bunch of devices, and this is kind of where I actually found out about them, and it's kind of cool. So if you have like a Sonos networked stereo system in your house, or one of these like crazy, you know, app driven internet based hi-fis, you can totally put our stupid show on that via Stitcher. So yeah.
Nice.
There you go. So anyways, you can go check it out. It's stitcher.com. The actual link to the Punk News podcast on Stitcher is a big long link, and you can find links to that whenever we post anything on Punk News. So yeah, so go check it out. It might be something that you like. And that's all. That's all I got to say.
I guess I will plug one thing. Two Gregs, One Podcast is going to be coming back real soon. So you just keep an eye out, man. Coming for you.
All right. When?
Oh, we're going to record on the 20th. So then I'll be bugging you to put it up on iTunes shortly after that.
And I'll ignore you for a month. So, okay,
yeah,
cool.
God.
So, anyways, that's all. We'll talk to you guys later.